Blog Talk Radio.
All alone on the hilltop, I sat there in the vision pit, a hole dug into the hill, my arms hugging my knees as I watched Old Man Chest, the medicine man who had brought me there, disappear far down in the valley. He was just a moving black dot among the pines, and soon he was gone altogether. Now I was all by myself, left on the hilltop for 4 days and nights without food or water until he came back to me. And, you know, we Indians are not like some white folks. A man and a wife, 2 children and 1 babysitter who watches the TV set while the parents are out visiting somewhere. Indian children are never alone. They are always surrounded by grandparents, uncles, cousins, relatives of all kinds, who fondle the kids, sing to them, tell them stories. If the parents go somewhere, the kids go along. But here I was, crouched in my vision pit, left alone by myself for the first time in my life. I was 16 then, still had my boy's name, and let me tell you, I was scared. I was shivering, and not only from this cold. The nearest human being was many miles away, and 4 days and nights is a long, long time. Of course, when it was all over, I could no longer be a boy, but a man. I would add my vision. I would be given a man's name. Hold on 1 second. I'm just trying to get my Sioux men are not afraid to endure hunger, thirst, and loneliness. And I was only 96 hours away from being a man. The thought was comforting. Comforting, too, was the warmth of the star. Men are not afraid to endure hunger, thirst, or loneliness. And I was only 96 hours away from being a man. The thought was comforting. Comforting, too, was the warmth of the star blanket, which old man Chest had wrapped around me to cover my nakedness. My grandmother had made it especially for this. And my first anvlechtia, my first vision-seeking, beautifully designed quilt. Well, with a large morning star made of many pieces of brightly colored cloth. The star was so bright it covered most of the blanket. If Watkin Tonkau, the Great Spirit, would give me the vision and power, I would become a medicine man and perform many ceremonies wrapped in that quilt. I am an old man now, and many times grandfather, but I still have that star blanket my grandmother made for me. I treasure it, and someday I shall be buried in it. The medicine man had also left a peace pipe with me, together with a bag of kinnikinick, our kind of tobacco made of red willow bark. This pipe was even more of a friend to me than this star blanket. To us, the pipe is like an open Bible. White people need a church house, a preacher, and a pipe organ to get into a praying mood. There are so many things to distract you. Who else is in the church? Whether the other people notice that you have come, the pictures on the wall, the sermons, how much money you should give, and did you bring it with you? And we think you can't have a vision that way. For us Indians, there is just the pipe, the earth we sit on in the open sky. The spirit is everywhere. Sometimes it shows itself through an animal, a bird, or some trees and hills. Sometimes it speaks from the badlands, a stone, or even from the water. That smoke from the peace pipe, it goes straight up to the spirit world. But this is a two-way thing. Power flows down to us through that smoke, through the pipe stem. You feel that power as you hold your pipe. It moves from the pipe, it's right into your body. It makes your hair stand up. That pipe is not just a thing, it is alive. Smoking this pipe would make me feel good and help me to get rid of my fears. As I ran my fingers along its bowl of smooth red pipestone, red like the blood of my people, I no longer felt scared. That pipe had belonged to my father and to his father before him. It would someday pass to my son and through him to my grandchildren. As long as we had the pipe, there would be a Sioux nation. As I fingered the pipe, touched it, felt its smoothness that came from long use, I sensed that my forefathers who had once smoked this pipe were with me on that hill. Right in the vision pit, I was no longer alone. Besides the pipe, the medicine man had also given me a gourd. In it were 40 small squares of flesh, which my grandmother had cut from her arm with a razor blade. I had seen her do it. Blood had been streaming down from her shoulder to her elbow as she carefully put down each piece of skin on a handkerchief. Anxious not to lose a single one. It would have made those anthropologists mad. Imagine performing such an ancient ceremony with a razor blade instead of a flint knife. To me, it did not matter. Someone dear to me had undergone pain, given me something of herself, part of her body, to help me pray and make me strong-hearted. How could I be afraid with so many people living and dead helping me? One thing still worried me. I wanted to become a medicine man, a Yuwipi, a healer, carrying on the ancient ways of the Sioux Nation. But you cannot learn to be a medicine man like a white man goes to a medical school. An old holy man can teach you about herbs and the right ways to perform a ceremony where everything must be in its proper place, where every move, every word has its own special meaning. These things you can learn, like spelling, like training a horse. But by themselves, these things mean nothing. Without the vision and the power, this learning will do no good. It would not make me a medicine man. What if I failed? If I had no vision? Or if I dreamed of the thunder beings or lightning struck the hill? That would make me at once into a hiyoka, a contrary-wise, an upside-down man, a clown. You'll know it if you get the power, my uncle Chest had told me. If you are not given it, you won't lie about it. You won't pretend that you would kill you. That would kill you, or kill somebody close to you, somebody you love. Night was coming on. I was still lightheaded and dizzy from my first sweat bath, in which I had purified myself before going up the hill. I had never been in a sweat lodge before. I had sat in a little beehive-shaped hut made of bent willow branches and covered with blankets to keep the heat in. Old Chest and three other medicine men had been in the lodge with me. I had my back against the wall, edging as far away as I could from the red-hot stones glowing in the center. As Chest poured water over the rocks, hissing white steam enveloped me and filled my lungs. I thought the heat would kill me, burn the eyelids off my face. But right in the middle of all this swirling steam, I heard Chest singing. So it couldn't be all that bad. I did not cry out. All my relatives, which would have made him open the flap. Of the sweat lodge to let some cool air. And I was proud of this. I heard him praying for me. Oh, holy rocks, we receive your white breath, the steam. It's the breath of life. Let this young boy inhale it. Make him strong. The sweat bath had prepared me for my vision seeking. Even now, an hour later, my skin still tingled. But it seemed to have made my brains empty. Maybe that was good. Plenty of room for new insight. Darkness had fallen upon the hill. I knew that Han Hippie Wee had risen, the night sun, which is what we call the moon. And huddled in my narrow cave, I did not see it. Blackness was wrapped around me like a velvet cloth. It seemed to cut me off from the outside world, even from my own body. It made me listen to the voices within me. I thought of my forefathers who had crossed on this hill before me, because the medicine man in my family had chosen this spot for a place of meditation, and vision seeking ever since the day they had crossed the Missouri to hunt for buffalo in the White River country some 200 years ago. I thought that I could sense their presence right through the earth I was leaning against. I could feel them entering my body, feel them stirring in my mind and heart. Sounds came to me through the darkness, the cries of the wind, the whisper of the trees, the voice of nature, animal sounds, the hooting of an owl. Suddenly I felt an overwhelming presence. Down there with me in my cramped hole was a big bird. The pit was only as wide as myself, and I was a skinny boy. But that huge bird was flying around me as if it had the whole sky to himself. I would hear his cries, sometimes near and sometimes far, far away. I felt feathers or a wing touching my back and head. This feeling was so overwhelming that it was just too much for me. I trembled and my bones turned to ice. I grasped the rattle with the 40 pieces of my grandmother's flesh. It also had many little stones in it, tiny fossils picked up from an ant heap. Ants collect them. Nobody knows why. These little stones are supposed to have a power in them. It shook the rattle. I shook the rattle and it made a soothing sound like rain falling on a rock. He was talking to me, but he did not calm my fears. I took the sacred pipe in my other hand and began to sing and pray. Pankashila, Grandfather Spirit, help me. But this did not help. I don't know what got into me, but I was no longer myself. I started to cry. Crying, even my voice was different. I sounded like an older man. I couldn't even recognize the strange voice. I used long ago words in my prayer, words no longer used nowadays. I tried to wipe away my tears, but they wouldn't stop. In the end, I just pulled that quilt over me, rolled myself up in it. Still, I felt the bird's wings touching me. Slowly, I perceived that a voice was trying to tell me something. It was a bird cry, but I tell you, I began to understand some of it. That happens sometimes. I know a lady who had a butterfly sitting on her shoulder. The butterfly told her things. This made her become a great medicine woman. I heard a human voice, too, strange and high-pitched, a voice which could not come from an ordinary living being. All at once, I was way up there with the birds. The hill, of which the vision pit was way above everything. I could look down even on the stars, and the moon was close to my left side. It seemed as though the earth and the stars were moving below me. A voice said, "You are sacrificing yourself here to be a medicine man. In time you will be one. You will teach other medicine men. We are the foul spirit, the winged ones, the eagles and the owls. We are a nation, and you shall be our brother. You will never kill or harm any one of us. You are going to understand us whenever you come to seek a vision here on this hill. You will learn about herbs and roots, and you will heal people. You will ask them for nothing in return. A man's life is short. Make yours a worthy one." I felt that these voices were good, and slowly my fear left me. I had lost all sense of time. I did not know whether it was day or night. I was asleep, yet wide awake. Then I saw a shape before me. It rose from the darkness, and the swirling fog which penetrated my earth hole. I saw that this was the great-grandfather, Taka Ushti, named Deer, old man chief of the Minipanchu. I could see the blood dripping from my great-grandfather's chest where a white soldier had shot him. I understood that my grandfather wished me to take his name. This made me glad beyond words. We Sioux believe that there is something within us that controls us, something like a second person. Almost, we call it Nagi. What other people might call soul, spirit, or essence. One can't see it, feel it, or taste it, but that time on the hill, and only that once, I knew it was there inside of me. Then I felt the power surge through me like a flood. I cannot describe it, but it filled all of me. Now I knew for sure that I would become a Wikasa Waka, a medicine man. Again, I wept, this time with happiness. I didn't know how long I had been up there, on that hill. 1 minute or a lifetime. I felt a hand on my shoulder, gently shaking me. It was the old man Chest, who had come for me. He told me that I had been in this vision pit 4 days and 4 nights, and that it was time to come down. He would give me something to eat and water to drink, and then I was to tell him everything that had happened to me during the Han Bla Chia. He would interpret my vision for me. He told me that the vision pit had changed me in a way that I would not be able to understand at that time. He told me also that I was no longer a boy, that I was a man now, and I was lame deer. The next chapter is that it's a remarkable thing. I wanted to just mention, I forgot to mention this in the beginning, but this book was first published in 1972 and republished in 1976 in a pocketbook. That's what I'm reading here now. And I don't know if you can get this on Amazon. There may be other copies. I bought this years and years ago, back in the, maybe in the 80s, used bookstore. And I was floored by it. And, it's a remarkable thing, he talks about, it's a very human book. This is one of the most ancient rites of the Sioux. Imagine darkness so intense and so complete that it is almost solid, flowing around you like ink, covering you like a velvet blanket, a blackness which cuts you off from the everyday world, which forces you to withdraw deep into yourself, which makes you see with your heart instead of your eyes. You can't see, but your eyes are open. You are isolated, but you know that you are part of the Great Spirit, united with all living things. And out of this utter darkness comes the roaring of drums, the sound of prayers, the high-pitched songs, and among all of these wounds, your ear catches the voices of the spirits. Tiny voices, ghost-like, whispering to you from unseen lips. Lights are flitting through the room, almost touching you. Little flashes of lightning coming at you from the darkness. Rattles are flying through the air, knocking against your head and shoulders. You feel the wings of birds brushing your face. Feel the light touch of a feather on your skin. And always you hear the throbbing drums filling the darkness with their beating, filling the empty spaces inside yourself, making you forget the things that clutter up your mind, making your body sway to their rhythm. And across the black nothingness, you feel the presence of a man lying face down in the center of the room, his fingers laced together with a rawhide, his body tied and wrapped in a blanket, a living mummy, through whom the spirits are talking to you. This is what you experience during the Yuwipi ceremony. Yuwipi is one of the most ancient rites. Some people say that it is not so old, but they are wrong. Their belief stems from the fact that Yuwipi is never mentioned by name in the old books about Indian religions because it has remain hidden from outsiders. I am an old man now, but my grandfather, our grandmother, told me about the Siwipi when I was still a small boy, just as she had been told by her child during her childhood. In this way, the knowledge of it goes back through the generations, and nobody knows its beginning. I believe Siwipi to be as old as our people, because it's symbolism. The whole thinking behind it goes back to our earliest times. The sacred things used in these ceremonies are ties that bind us to the dim past, to a time before the first white man set foot on this continent. Even though it is not mentioned by name, one book describes Siwipi as it was practiced long ago, before we had houses to live in. This book was written by a woman who lived for a number of years among us when I was a small boy, before the First World War. She got her stories from the white-haired holy men who still remembered the days before the reservations. Here is a page from this book. When a man skillful in the use of the sacred stones is called to attend a sick person, he was expected to give a demonstration of his spiritual supernatural power. Many were invited to witness the exhibition, and it is said that harm would come to those who did not believe in the sacred stones. The sick person filled a pipe, which he gave to the medicine man. After smoking it, the man was slightly bound with thongs, even his fingers and toes being interlaced with sinews, like those of which bowstrings are made, and after which he was firmly tied in a hide. The tent was dark, and the medicine man sang songs addressed to the sacred stones. He sang also his own dream songs, and strange sounds were heard in the darkness, and objects were felt to be flying through the air. The voices of animals were speaking, and one said, "My grandchild, you are very sick, but I will cure you." Frequently a buffalo came, and those who did not believe in the sacred stones were kicked by the buffalo or struck by a flying stone or bundle of clothing. At last, the medicine man called, "Hasten, make a light." Dry grass, which was ready, was placed on the fire. In its light, the man was seen wedged between the poles near the top of the teepee with all the restraining cords cast from him. All the main features of today's Siwipi ceremony are described here. The stones, the darkness, the tying up. Siwipi, like all our sacred words, has many meanings. And Yui means to bind or to tie up. Siwipi is our word for the tiny, glistening rocks we pick up from the anthills. They are sacred. They are the power. We put 405 of these little rocks in the cords, which we use in our ceremonies, according to the number of our green relatives, the different trees in our Sioux universe. And Siwipi Wasikang, that is the power of the sacred rocks, is also another name for Tonka, our oldest god, who was like a rock, old because beyond imagination, ageless and eternal. The ancient ones worshipped this god in the form of a huge stone painted red. The old word for god and the old word for stone are the same, Tonka Shila, grandfather, but it is also a name for the great spirit. The word Tonka is in there. A more modern word for rock is Inyan. Inyan Wisikan Wakan is our Indian names for Moses. Indian medicine men, too, like round stones for the hilltops, which they bring down with them and use to cure people. And these stones bear a hidden message, which they sometimes reveal to us. Invisible writing for those who read with their hearts. The old medicine men used to talk to the stones and were able to communicate with them. Tonka Inyan, the rock, has always been sacred to us. That's story of our greatest mystery and the story of the peace pipe also tells us that when the white buffalo calf woman came or gave us the sacred pipe, she also gave us a rock, round and red in the, as the earth, made from the lifeblood of our people. Inscribed upon it were several circles, the seven campfires of our nation, the seven ways to worship of the pipe. And long ago, this stone was kept in a special sacred Onikaga teepee. The bowl of the pipe and this sacred stone were made from the kind of rock which we dig out from the Minnesota Pipe Stone Quarry, the only place in the world where it is found. In this way, the sacredness of the rock is linked to the sacredness of the pipe. In the old days, one man had a stone which he sent out to look for, buffalo. He always spread a red painted buffalo skin on the stone to return to. One moment, the hide would be empty, and then suddenly, the stone would be there in the center of it. Sometimes, the stone brought back a pebble, or a sprig, or some medicine plant. The owner then questioned the stone, and would make known to the people what it had told them. One Sioux tribe had a scouting stone, which they would send out to see what their enemies were up to. This stone also had a returning place, a square earth altar made of fire and red powder. The ancient Yuwipi men unloosened rocks to search for lost objects. The farther such a stone had to travel, the longer it needed to return. Some medicine rocks don't like to be alone. They have helpers, smaller pebbles. Some rocks are used for curing and are kept wrapped carefully in a piece of buffalo skin lined with the down of eagle feathers. The stones like to stay in there. You don't lose them this way. A medicine stone is a perfect work of Wakan Tonka, Great Spirit. It is made up of one kind of matter only. Its surface has no beginning and no end. Its power lasts forever. Such stones should not be dug out from the ground. Stones thus embedded have been put there by the lighting, by the lightning, by the thunder powers. A Yuwipi man, unless he is also a Hiyoka, a contrary, does not use them. He finds his stones on the surface of my butts. To white people, this kind of talk seems strange. They have short memories. I have heard that in all the prehistoric caves, the world over, one finds painted pebbles used in religious rites. Your Bible is full of stories of sacred rocks set up in high places. Think of the Rock of Ages of St. Peter, whose name means rock. Think of Stonehenge. White people have forgotten this and have lost the power which is in the rocks. In a Yuwipi ceremony, the spirits and the lights dwell in the stones. The bright spark which you see in the dark, that light is Inyan, the round pebble. It controls our mother, the earth. It has the power. A soul goes into the rock and starts talking to you. It might say, I am your grandfather. You recognize me. I am his soul. I have come to help you. So listen carefully. During a Yuwipi ceremony, everybody puts a sprig of sagebrush behind his ear so he has, so he will understand the spirit when it comes to him. Men and women do this. So you see how ancient the Yuwipi is, but there is still much more to it than the lights and the stones. Let me describe a Yuwipi ceremony from the beginning to the end, and you have seen it. You are about to experience it again. I shall try to make you understand it fully. Let me read part of this. I don't know if I can read the entire ceremony here. A Yuwipi ceremony starts when someone, a man or woman, has a problem and needs help. That someone could be sick or he could be looking for a lost relative. He sends a peace pipe loaded with bull dung to a Yuwipi medicine man. If he does this in the right way, the medicine man cannot refuse to help him. He must perform the ceremony. Not all medicine men are Yuwipis. Some don't want to be, because a Yuwipi involves finding something. This could be a missing person, dead, drowned, or a bottom of a river. If the Yuwipi finds him, he brings grief to the family. Or the something could be a stolen article. The Yuwipi finds it, and everybody is embarrassed, the thief as well as the medicine man and the man who asked him to search for it. Some medicine men shy away from this. I myself used to practice Yuwipi, but I don't do it anymore. I have passed beyond that stage, but I have taught a number of men to become Yuwipis, and I will teach more. You see, a sponsor and a medicine man, to have a Yuwipi ceremony, you need a sponsor. The sponsor is the one with the problem and the one who needs help. There's no real fee for a medicine man's services, but the sponsor is expected to provide the food. When many people come to a ceremony, this can run into money, as much as $20 maybe, because everybody is welcome. During a meeting, not only the sponsor, but everybody can ask for help, and all will be fed. This brings us to the dog, a young and plump one. This is marked with a dab of red paint and quickly strangled. A woman will singe its hair off, cut it up, put it into a kettle over an open fire and boil it. You can't have a Yuwipi meeting without dog meat. You must eat of it, at least one small piece. We Sioux are fond of our dogs, but killing one for a ceremony is regarded as a sacrifice. The dog dies so that the people may live, and his flesh helps to cure the sick, gives them a special strength, and the dog is not killed for nothing. Large room can serve as a good place to hold a Yuwipi meeting, but some medicine men keep one permanent fixed up for the ceremony. As a start, one must remove all furniture and cover all windows and doors with blankets. Not the smallest flicker of light is allowed to penetrate from the outside, even though the ceremony always takes place at night. Even the faint glow of the moon could spoil the total blackness which we want. We go so far as to remove all mirrors and glass-covered pictures, or at least turn them against the wall. Nothing shiny which would reflect light should be in the room. Because eyeglasses and wristwatches reflect light, people will remove them before a ceremony and put them in their pockets. Otherwise, the spirits will love the dark, might become angry and knock their glasses off or yank the watches from their wrists. Next, the floor is covered with sagebrush. There are several kinds of sage, and all of them are sacred to us. But it is our first aid plant, and we use it in all our ceremonies. It represents the powers of nature. The sage stem is our hair, and our hair will make the spirits come to us, help us to understand them. All through the afternoon, before the ceremony, two girls have been busy making tobacco ties, little bundles of bull durum about the size of a hazelnut. They start by cutting cotton cloth into squares about an inch long and wide. They use cloth of four different colors for the four winds of the universe. They make 405 of these little squares, putting about a thimbleful of tobacco on each. They make these squares into tiny bundles, which they tie into a long, thin string. When they have done this, some men take the string with it, as many tobacco ties, and form it into large rectangle on the floor of the room. This rectangle leaves each enough space between the string and the wall for a person to sit down with his legs stretched out. In this space between the string and the wall sit all those who wish to take part in the ceremony. The inside of the rectangle is sacred. In its center, the medicine man will lie wrapped up like a mummy. Nobody is supposed to step inside the rectangle except the two men who will tie up the Kewipi man. And they will step outside again and sit with the others after they have done their work. In the old days, we had only four large bags of deer hide filled with tobacco instead of the string with the many little bundles. And we used kinikinik, our own red willow bark tobacco, instead of the bull durum. After laying out the string, we put up four flags of colored cloth at all the corners of the rectangle, a black, red, yellow, and white flag in that corner. And the black stands for the west, the night, darkness, and contemplation. The red represents the north, the pipestone, the blood of our people. Yellow stands for the east and the rising sun. And white is the south, the sun at its zenith. And the south also represents death. Going south in our language means dying, because the soul travels from north to south along the Milky Way to the spirit land. Some Yuwipis are also using green and blue flags these days. The green stands for our Mother Earth. The blue is the sky above us, the clouds. Four directions of the winds are also presented by a black, a red, and a yellow, and a white horse. A fifth horse, which is spotted, represents the up and down direction, the link between the sky and the earth, which is also symbolized by the stem of our sacred pipes and the pipe, our sacred pipe and the smoke rising from it. Some medicine men also explain that the four colors represent mankind, the black, red, yellow, and white race, and the unity of all human beings. Besides the four staffs, which hold up the colored flags, there is one more stick. This is the really important one. It stands in the middle between the black and red flags. This staff is half red and half black, with a thin white stripe separating the two. And in this case, the red stands for the day and the black for the night. The top of the staff is dyed in eagle feather. This represents the power and the wisdom which come from above. Because we Indians believe that the eagle is our wisest of all living creatures, Wanbli Galeshka, the spotted eagle, is the great power from the north. Halfway down the staff hang the tail of Paka Tapta Sapa, a special kind of deer with a black streak across its face. This deer is very sacred. To kill it is an unlucky deed. It represents the unity of the universe. Early in the morning, before anybody goes to the brook for water, this deer has already drunk it and blessed it. We use its hide for our sacred gourds. We put up these five staffs by filling big empty tin cans with earth, planting the sticks in them. Some people don't like this. They don't want to see a Maxwell House coffee can or an empty can of Hawaiian punch used for this. It is a little thing, maybe, but understandable. It is better to cut a round tree trunk into short sections, making a hole in the middle, planting the sticks in there. About these staffs, we don't use just any kind of wood for them. We are Wawakan supernatural. They are branches of Kanukimana, skunkwood, a kind of sumac. Why do we use this? There is a power in this wood. Those strange bushes have always 12 limbs on the west side and 7 limbs on the south side. We do not know why. The 7 limbs are watching the south and east wind, and the other six of the west and six for the north. Watch the universe. The moment when you pull that stick out of the ground is most important. Looking into the hole in the earth where it grew, you will see that kind of sickness is troubling the person. You will try to cure during the ceremony. Now we will speak about the altar, which is situated right behind the red and black center staff. It is formed of powder, earth made smooth with an eagle feather. It stands for Maka Sitomni and the all over earth, the universe. Through it, the whole world is in that room during the ceremony. In this sacred square of earth, the medicine man traces a design with his finger. Some of these designs are well known and used by all Yuwipis. Others are spasila, belonging to one man alone, according to his vision. I myself have mostly four altar designs. Use mostly four altar designs, though I knew many, many more. My chief design represents the Great Spirit, and one uses this to doctor a sick person. I have already drawn and described this design in the chapter about the circle and the square, about Indian symbolism. Another design comes from drawing a circle on this earth, and it represents the without end. The man who makes this design also puts himself in there through the picture of an animal, a woodpecker, a bear, an eagle. That's up to him. He also makes a lightning sign to get the thunder power. After reading this book and describing the symbols that the Indian symbols and names, I had a number of strange things happen. Sense that there were some very strange psychic visitations that this brought on an awareness of spirits that I that actually contacted me or spoke to me. I was quite surprised. Something had compelled me after reading this book for the first time, to create the symbols or some phenomenal symbol that spoke to me. I can't really explain the drive, or the push, or the inspiration. Once I learned the different symbols, and I can't explain them all to you here because that's impossible. It's really an auditory, or an audio presentation to present the pictures. But once I learned, and once I discovered the symbols that he used in his resultants and his ceremonies, I drew some of them. I started to draw them and create them myself, and just to experience the power of the symbol, you know, understand the symbol, because you can't fully understand it until you know what it means through a medicine man's interpretation or one who knows the symbol. But more so, you don't. You experience a vibration. You experience a level of spiritual connection to the symbol. Why that is, I'm not really, really sure, but you do. And there's some kind of a synchronistic connection between you and that symbol, especially if you draw that symbol, you know? Especially if you create that symbol, you know, and see the, feel the power that it has when you look at it, or when you draw it, even. There's so many sacred symbols. They're not just Indian, of course, but that, it's an art form, but meditative form of spiritual connection to the great universe through these universal icons, these symbols that we work with. And of course, those who it's a very great saying that those who gets into the, in the ceremonies here, he talks about the different symbols, and a man who makes this design also puts himself in there through the picture of an animal, a woodpecker, a bear, an eagle. It's up to him. He who makes a lightning sign to get the thunder power. A design representing a cocoon, the Turkey Spider Man, would not ordinarily be used by a medicine man, but by someone who wanted to perform some magic, a hikula, a hioka, perhaps. This spider design would be used like a love charm. With this powerful design, one could take the souls of a boy and a girl and tie them together. Then they couldn't help finding each other and falling in love. You don't have to believe this, but it really works. And the gourds, the rattles behind Wagamuha, are most important for the ceremony. You put them all at the sides of the altar, and there should be two of them. You know, some medicine men use four for the different directions, in which case you put the one in the east last, and the east side works with Banka Shila, the great spirit, and with the morning star. And the rattles are made of deer hide, some old ones of buffalo hide. I know some are made from a buffalo scrotum. As far back as people can remember, rattles have been used to cure the sick. Long ago, we even had men who specially designated keepers of the gourds. Instead, the gourds are already told you, I already told you, are the sacred tiny Uwipi stones. In some cases, men or women cut little squares of skin from their arms and put them in the rattles to help a relative to get well. The sound from the rattle is not music. and it does not represent a rattlesnake, as some white men believe. These rattles talk to you. If the man who is putting on the ceremony gives you some of the holy herb and puts it in your ear, you will understand what the rattle is saying. The herb has no name in the white man's language. It has no green stuff at the top. It is just a root. When a spirit enters the room during the ceremony, he picks up the little rattle and makes a noise with it, and he may hit the body of a sick person to make a cure. The rattle travels so fast nobody can ever catch it, and this has to do with Takuskanskan, the power which moves. All these things I have mentioned, the tobacco knots, the color flags, the staff, the altar, the boards, are holy things, and no Yawuki ceremony can be performed without them. But the most important thing I have left to the last, we must also have the holy pipe, which plays a big role in our rites. All these things we have, we must have other objects that Yawuki man might use from his own medicine bundle, eagle's heads and claws, bear paws, special stones, antlers, animals, and plant things, according to his vision. These will use every time he performs a Yawuki ceremony, but the tobacco ties and the flags will be used only once. They can be burned afterwards, or they are given away for a keepsake, but one can never use them again in a spiritual way. Besides all these sacred things, we have also waiting the kettle with dog meat and a pot filled with cold, clear water from a spring, and these two are placed within the rectangle of the tobacco ties near the red flag. Elsewhere in the room are pots and plates and bread and soup, corn and berry wasna, the pudding called wajuapi, and a special kind of mint tea we drink on this occasion. All this food will be distributed after the ceremony is over. All is now ready for the Yawuki, the skull practice, as they used to say in the old days, before the tying up of the room is purified and with sweet grass. We call it wakanga, and it is braided like a woman's pigtail. We burn it at one end, walking around with it, waving it so that the scent spreads throughout the room, blessing it with all fragrance. It smells so good, it swirls around us and makes us all relatives. With it, we purify all the things we use in the ceremony. It drives out evil influences, and it counteracts the effect of a woman having her monthly time. When she has her period, she is not supposed to take part in the ceremony because being in snati is having a great natural power which could spoil the medicine and undo the curing. If a woman is naughty, one can't doctor her. Women know this and stay away from a ceremony when they have their time. But in case there should be one who doesn't know, well, the smoke from the sweet grass will neutralize the power. For some ceremonies, one uses cedar smoke, which gives a man the power to dream. But for Yawuki, we prefer the sweet grass. And I'm going to stop there, because then what happens is it goes into a series of actual pictures in this book describing some of the different things. And anyway, and it goes on for a few more pages after that. But at this point, we've ended the show, and I want to thank everybody for joining me. Please tell your friends about it if you like it. And I hope you do. So good night, everyone, and thank you for joining me. And join us again next week for, another show on next Tuesday.